Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Empire.
Welcome to the latest edition of the All's Caps podcast with former Capitals defenseman Carl Osner. I'm AP hockey writer Steve Wino, and we are joined by NBC Sports Washington's Andrew Gillis. Andrew, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. It should be fun.
Yeah, so we're in the middle of a long break now for the Capitals, a five-day break. And before I get your thoughts, Carl, on kind of what these breaks do, because we've talked about this a few times, Andrew, your thoughts on kind of where this team stands right now and maybe the benefit of a break like this going into kind of a stretch run here.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a weird couple of weeks, I think, because you look at how well they played in March. I mean, they played two of their best games of the year, I thought, against Carolina. They won 4-0 in Mantha's return. They beat them in the shootout. And then you get kind of smacked by them about a week ago. And now we get 4 days off leading into this little break. I think that it's just going to be weird to look at the rest of the season, because we're here. Like, this is the playoff stretch. This is the end of the year. And if this team is going to do anything in the playoffs, you kind of look at the opponents that are coming down the pipe, and this is it. I mean, if you don't turn it on now, I think it's now or never.
Yeah, and Carl, 5 day break, I'm sure guys are getting a couple of days off in here. Is it good at this time of year, or is it bad this time of year to have 5 days off?
You know what? I think it's really good. I like that you have some time to rest. You know, the coaching staff, the trainers can figure out who needs some days to just not do anything and get back at least to as close to even as possible. But also, just like towards the end of the year, you don't get that much time to practice because guys are tired. You want to have guys just, you know, take some time to do a reset. But also, you can now kind of work on a few things that you haven't been able to work on, right? You can shore up some of the D zone stuff, some of the neutral zone. Because we kind of already know which teams are going to be in the playoffs on this side, you can start game planning a little bit. You know, that was one of the things that was so great about Todd Reirden and Barry Trotz and Lane and Blaine with that staff is that when we were a good team, so we knew we were going to be in the playoffs, but we started practicing, gearing up towards, you know, how are we going to play against the New York or a Pittsburgh or the Islanders? And we would work on different types of neutral zones and D zones that you wouldn't really want to do if you were actually in a race. And so having 5 days off where you can watch more video, you can be a little bit more specific in practice if that's what this coaching staff thinks they need to do. Otherwise you use it to just rest, get the mind right, and, you know, have some fun in practice. Like, there's a few different ways you can go about it, but this time of year, you're pretty fortunate to have that kind of a break.
Yeah, and that Carolina game the other day, obviously a blowout loss, but the hit by Tom Wilson on Vincent Trocheck and his fight with Brendan Smith, this is what Tom Wilson brings to this team, right, Andrew? I mean, not only can he score a power play goal or go right after the power play, but he answers the bell in those kind of situations and really juices up a crowd and a team.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought him up, because I think if you look at just what the Capitals are as a team, what their makeup is, and, you know, like Carl said, you kind of look around the rest of the East and see who, you know, could be a potential playoff matchup, who the teams are going to be. I think the path to victory is pretty clear for Washington, and it's that you just be an awful team to play against. And that's, I think, I mean, obviously you have Ovi, you have Kuznetsov, but I think that starts with Tom Wilson, because Tom Wilson is the guy. I mean, I think he's one goal away right now from setting a career high, or at least tying his career high for goals in a year. That is just a guy that nobody wants to game plan for. And I think that is kind of the way that you're going to have to win, and not only win down the stretch, but win in the playoffs too.
Yeah, Carl, what do you make of Tom? I mean, you obviously played with him earlier in his career. He has just become an all-around player. We talk about Alex Ovechkin all the time, but what Tom Wilson can do physically, he is going to have a career. He already has a career high in points. He's going to have a career high in goals, most likely. This is like the most complete Tom Wilson we've seen.
Well, yeah, and it's fun to watch his career arc because he's done a little bit of everything. You know, like he's truly worked his way up from grinding it out on the fourth line to fighting everybody to making it on the top line and all-star game and all that stuff. So you really appreciate a player like him. He's also had some controversy and suspensions and all that, but he's done all this trying to carve out a career and a good niche that he has specifically. There's so few players in the league that can do everything the way he does. And it's tough because you want him to play on that edge and you don't want him to cross it. But, you know, sometimes you do when you play that style of game. But I think that the team is its most dangerous when they have its, you know, I guess you could say most dangerous player playing that way. And, I know some teams have beefed up, you know, the Rangers have picked up Reeves and all that stuff. Just in case they need something like that. But you can't match skill and ice time with Tom as a Ryan Reeves. And so when it comes to the playoffs, yeah, you want to beat up on teams as much as you can within the rules and wear them down. You know, you take full advantage of seven games. And if I know that the puck's coming in my corner and Tom is bearing down on me, you know, in game one or two, I'm taking these hits and trying to make the play. But come game six and seven, I'm rethinking things a little bit, you know. And there's other guys that can do it too. But, you know, he's the most obvious. And it's just fun to see that he's come full circle. And when he's at his best, I mean, it's a weapon that no other team really has in the league.
Yeah, it was noticeable actually the other day after that Trocheck hit, and in real time it looked clean. But Tom is looking at the screen on the bench, just making sure like I didn't get a piece of the head, right? I mean that's because there is a little bit of that edge, Andrew. Like as Carl talked about, of Tom Wilson playing on the edge, that if that's a half an inch lower, it might be a suspension.
Yeah, and over the last couple of years, I think I think it was that Sundqvist hit was 2018. I think really, if you look at his play since then, there seems to be a concerted effort to make sure everything he does is within the rules, to make sure that what he's doing is allowed. And when you have a player playing like that, like Carl said, I mean, like it doesn't make sense. I mean, what was the quote a couple of years ago? I think it was Merrick who reported that, you know, Ryan Reeves told an Eastern Conference team, you know, I am the solution to your Tom Wilson problem. Well, the problem is you can't line match a guy like that because sure, he can, you know, he can be physical and he can do all of those great things. He can penalty kill, he can do all that, but he can put pucks in the net too. And when you kind of add that into his game, like you've mentioned, it's so hard to stop a guy like that. And when you're playing within the rules, I mean, there's not really much you can do.
Yeah, well, before we get to some more kind of like fun questions, one more hockey thing on just Carolina, and I'm eager both your thoughts. First you, Andrew, on what do you think a Carolina-Washington series would look like if it's Hurricanes, Capitals in the first round?
Well, my blood pressure is going to go up because those deadline stories would be pretty difficult to write. And I would have a feeling that there'd be a few more of those hits where people kind of raise their attention to. But I think that, like, Washington Pittsburgh has always kind of been, that's the matchup, right? Like, that's the matchup everybody wants to see. That's, you know, Ovechkin cry, everybody wants to talk about it. But I think it just from what I've seen this year, I think it would be the most fun playoff matchup for the Caps. I think it would be the most entertaining. And I mean, you've got every storyline possible there. You got Laviolette and Brendan Moore. I just think that it would be a fun physical series. And I think over the last couple of years, they've kind of grown to dislike each other. And it would be, man, it would be physical. I don't know if Washington would win it, but I think it would be wildly, wildly intense.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I don't know what it is. And maybe it was just my years of playing against Carolina. But when I look at them, I think, you know, that's a team to beat. You know, we could beat that team as the Capitals. And I still feel that way. And that's, you know, part of just my old mindset, I guess, is that's what I see. And, you know, and I guess this last month, playing them, whatever it was, three times and winning two and, you know, losing one in a little bit ugly fashion. But I still have that mindset. So I
I think it would be a series that would be somewhat favorable for the Caps, to be honest. Even though Carolina is such an exciting team to watch, like what they can do sometimes, they play so fast and there's just so much skill and it seems like so much chemistry. Everybody's out there speaking Finnish to each other and making no-look plays and stuff. It's just one of those teams that is very exciting, but in my opinion, that would be the matchup. Yeah, I would like that matchup of the other potential ones.
Yeah, and Capitals did win 3 of 4 games this season against the Carolina Hurricanes. Potential first round matchup, obviously. When we come back on All's Caps, talk a little bit about kind of Andrew and what he does covering this team, and later on, Carl's stupid questions. Welcome back to the All's Caps podcast with former Capitals defenseman Carl Alsner and NBC Sports Washington's Andrew Gillis. I'm AP hockey writer Steve Wino. Andrew is, I guess, newer to the game. I'm the old guy here, the old guy of the group here, but also Tarik El-Bashir and I have been covering this team off and on for a decade. You're relatively new to this, also do some Wizard stuff. I'm just curious your impression of covering the Capitals, and I know it's different in the Zoom world and kind of the no open locker room world, but what are your impressions of covering this team at this stage of the game after they won a championship, after you growing up kind of being a Capitals fan and in this area?
Yeah, it's pretty weird. I was actually talking to somebody last night and, you know, I was like, there's all the news with locker rooms are kind of opening back up to media now. And I was like, I haven't been in an open locker room in 2 years. So, you know, I've covered the Caps now and the Wizards for 13 months, for 14 months. And I don't think I've talked to 4 guys, maybe one-on-one. Like everything has either been over Zoom or everything has been in a press conference setting. And it's weird just because there's not like the, you know, sometimes it feels more like transactional. And I don't like that. Like sometimes it's cool to just walk up to a guy and be like, hey, man, like, how's life? Like, you know, you just kind of shoot the breeze with him and kind of see how he's doing. And it's cool. Like, you know, with, I got the Zoom thing for a while. Now I'm done. And, you know, like going back to what the second part of that question was, you know, like Wano said, I grew up in the area. I grew up a fan of the team. So like, it's kind of funny, like being like on this podcast and just being like, oh yeah, like Carl Alsner, like I have his phone number now. And just like sitting, like I'm like staying, I remember like, I, you know, I have a couple of friends that, you know, they're like, oh, I heard your question on the Caps post game show or whatever it is. And it's like, it's just weird to kind of be in that situation, like having gone to so many games as a kid and interviewing players that like I grew up rooting for and stuff like that. It's a pretty unique experience.
Well, and that's I think we'd mentioned this at one point, but when you grow up with a team and you're a fan of the team and the players that are involved and all that, do you feel like it's harder to be hard on your team? You know, when you're right, I know your job is to not really have a bias, I guess, and you want to report things as straight as possible, but do you find yourself looking on the bright side, or are you the opposite where it's kind of like, you know, it's my team, like I can harp on them because, you know, I followed them for as long as it is. Like I'm always trying to put a positive spin on it, you know, like I want to be like, you know, this guy made this play, but he probably made it because of these reasons, you know, it wasn't his fault. He didn't make a stupid play. There was all these other things that led to him making that decision. So how does that come across for you? Do you try and defend your team, or are you just trying to shoot it straight?
Well, I think when I first started, I was actually kind of worried that I was going to be too hard because like I was sitting there and I was like, I knew everything about the team. I knew kind of everybody on the team. And I was just like, oh, okay. You know, now like, okay, now you can't, you know, be reckless with whatever you say. You kind of have to tone it down. You have to be professional with what you say. You have to kind of approach what you're doing professionally. So that I thought was kind of the way that I tried to approach it. Cause like you said, you obviously want to shoot it down the middle, but you know, there are times when you're like, okay, like, do I know this? Just like, is this fact? Is this like an opinion that I used to have? Like you kind of have to balance that out. But yeah, I think at first, like, I think now it's kind of normalized a little bit, but when I first started, I was like, okay, like I need to reread everything I say, every tweet I send, every article I write, because I can't be the guy that's like just blasting them for no reason when, you know, that's just what I had as a prior opinion, you know?
And what I always did and still do now is I consider that everything, every word I'm going to write is going to be read by everyone on every team. Like it's not obviously going to happen, but if I'm going to write something and anybody's going to question it, I want to be able to justify this is why I wrote it and have complete faith in it, so that if Carl, like if I wrote something, say, Carl, turn the puck over on this play, that you can come to me and be like, yeah, this is why I turn it over, or we can have a discussion where I could justify what I'm writing.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing that you'll enjoy about being in person, you know, is where you can actually have those discussions active if you do need to defend something that you say, because, you know, it's a delicate balance, because then you get guys like the guys who do the color in Boston there, who the only I want to listen to them from Boston. No one else wants to listen, because it's, you know, it's a one-way street. So I think people appreciate, you know, when you can tell both sides with showing maybe a little bit of hometown flair, if that's who you're writing for. But at the same time, you know, you want to read about the game. You don't want to read and make it sound like, oh, the Caps were the best team on the ice, but they actually lost 4-0. You know, like you need to be a little bit open, I guess. But yeah, I mean, as a player, I'll just say, it's always nice when you hear good things. just if you can, you don't want to sugarcoat it too much, but you always love when someone's, you know, giving you a fair shake. And, you know, if I can give any advice, I guess it would be to, you're always trying to find out every angle, you know, get every answer that you can, because the players end up respecting it a little bit more. And then you find that you're going to get better answers and more time and better conversations. And it's a very, very delicate balance, and you don't want to feel like you're sucking up to anybody at any point, but it's the truth.
Yeah, and in-person locker room, open locker room will help that whenever it comes back at some point, whether it's playoffs or next season. Just to take everybody behind the curtain on this, we as a media corps, we're degenerate gamblers, for sure. We bet on spot the cow during games. We bet on what section the cow is spotted in. Andrew, early in the season, is like, I really want in on this. Didn't you win one of these spot the cows, Andrew?
Yeah, and I really pissed Wino off when I did it. It was like this was probably like November, December.
This was early on.
Like every my coworker JJ, he was like every game he would like get all excited, get all ready for the spot the cow thing. And one day I was kind of like shy and I didn't really want to be like, hey man, but eventually I was just like, you know what, like might as well. So they threw me in the group chat and it was like the third one. And I think there had ever there had only been like one winner before that.
Yeah, Raven.
I think it was one, and then but I won like $70 on like the like. So literally within 30 seconds, Wino comes over and just like slams $10 like right next to my laptop. He's like, "I need a dollar back," and like storms back to his seat. It was pretty funny. Like I almost felt bad about winning, but that was the breaks.
We're not high stakes, Carl, like some of maybe your golf bets or your poker or poker on the plane, but like we do get into it on something like this.
Hey, a win's a win. It doesn't really matter what you're betting on. You just want to beat people.
Exactly.
I would, yeah, for sure. Like I'm trying to think of what other bets you guys can do. Like when the first TV timeout's going to come, like at what?
That would be crazy even for us, I think. Yeah, I think game-winning goal, the broadcasters do game-winning goal. So that's a major one too. But when we come back on All's Caps, Andrew Gillis will be the latest victim of Carl's stupid questions. Welcome back to the All's Caps podcast. I'm IP hockey writer Steve Wino with former Capitals defenseman Carl Alsner and NBC Sports Washington's Andrew Gillis. And now Carl's favorite portion of the show, Carl's stupid questions.
Yeah. So I just want to let this be known. This is my blue notebook. It's got my Caps NHL alumni logo on it. And the other day cleaned up the house because we had something going on and someone put it in a cabinet that it should never have been in. And I was panicking. I'm like, this is where all my questions are. My stupid questions are in here, all my scoring. And I'm like, I also have notes from my other job, my job for Cat. And I'm like, what the heck am I going to do? Like I got lost everything. How am I going to do this podcast? And I found it. So I'm happy. I'm happy that I'm back. And I got one new question here that I want to ask, that I'm going to throw in the mix as well. So should be a good time. You ready?
Let's do it.
First one here is, what would be your dream? Well, first of all, you're born and raised in the DC area?
Yeah. Born and raised in Northern Virginia.
Okay. So what would be your dream place to live?
Dream place to live, Hawaii. So I've never been, and I know it sounds stupid that I would want to, you know, move somewhere sight unseen. But as Wino and I have discussed a couple of times, I am not an experienced traveler. I have not really been to a lot of places. But I feel like going to Hawaii, you kind of adopt the mentality and the mindset of being in Hawaii, and you can just live carefree, kind of relax. You don't really have, it feels like just people in Hawaii, just stress doesn't exist. So I feel like that would be a good spot to live.
Okay. Hawaii is for sure top three on my list.
Good.
Sight unseen. You saying that, we've bought two or three different places sight unseen. So I'm 100%. That's a hell of an answer. I have three pluses right next to Hawaii for both. I'll remember that. What's your late night snack or guilty pleasure?
Oh man. I have a few of them. So the one that I can never buy, like the full actual size things at the grocery store, I always have to buy like the snack size, Cheez-Its. I burn through Cheez-Its like nobody's business. So whenever, you know, it's really difficult sometimes because you get home from like a Caps game or a Wizards game and it's like 12:30 and you're like, I'm going to be up for another 2 hours and throw on a movie or something. And if I have a box of Cheez-Its there, it's gone. Like, I swear to God, I will eat the entire thing in a day or two. It's ridiculous.
Nice. I mean, some people go salty, some people go sweet. And I feel like salty is the safe choice to go late night instead of sugar in the system. But I've never really dug into the Cheez-Its, but I'm going to put that on my list now.
Wait. Goldfish or Cheez-Its? Because I'm a Goldfish guy.
Okay. So I think Cheez-Its taste better, but Goldfish is almost like popcorn to me, where like if I eat Cheez-Its, you could put, you know, it's like one or two in your mouth. Like if I take Goldfish, I'm taking like a handful and I'm like shoveling it into my mouth. So I prefer Cheez-Its, but I mean, it's Goldfish and cheese. I almost said Goldfish, but Cheez-Its and Goldfish for me.
I feel like the experience of eating a Cheez-Its is nicer than the Goldfish. The Goldfish is kind of hard.
I agree with you. Yep.
Okay. Interesting.
I'll respectfully disagree, but that's fine.
Okay. Now we're going, because this is my new favorite question is ugliest fruit or vegetable. I'm curious. It takes people some time to figure out what to answer. And I just saw one yesterday at this Indian market and it was hilarious. It's a long squash. I don't know if anyone's ever seen that, different from the regular squash. And I highly recommend a Google on that one because it's a pretty entertaining vegetable.
So I've listened to this podcast a couple of times, and I remember the first time you asked that, it was literally it's a parsnip or I don't even know how to say it, but it's like a colorless carrot. Like if you look at it, it's just basically like, imagine if you just sap the color out of a carrot and then they can get these like spindly little leg things on them. Like, I don't know if they come out of the root or whatever, but it looks literally like something you'd see in a horror movie. It's something like some like goblin thing that's like a ghost that's got like eight different legs. Like it scares you. And I'm like, I don't even know how people eat this. I don't know what it tastes like, and I never will, because it just looks awful.
Well, when somebody purees it for you nicely with some butter and in its original form. Yeah, it's a good answer. It's the first thing that went through my mind too, is it's a perfect Halloween vegetable. It's like colorless, like a ghost. Like, it's a good description too. You're getting bonus points here. Okay. So this one, I audibled on this question because you're young, right? How old are you?
I'm 25.
25. Okay. So I wanted to ask you, because I've noticed here in this area that when new houses go up, it's a whole lot of house and not a whole lot of yard. And I'm curious, when you buy your first house, do you want a whole lot of house or a whole lot of yard?
So I'm assuming the pretext is that I live in this area.
Yes.
Okay.
In Hawaii.
Because I think what's that one?
In Hawaii, maybe.
Well, see, I think the answer varies depending on where you live. But so I think here I take a whole lot of yard, because whole lot of yard, you can just, there's not a lot of whole lot of yard places, especially as you kind of get closer to DC. Like you're in Arlington, you're in Fairfax, you're in like part most of Loudoun. You're not really kind of, you can get a whole lot of house everywhere. You can't get a whole lot of yard, and like just having a barbecue, having it, like if you have a big enough yard for a pool, like there are just more things you can do that are unique to a big yard than a big house. So I would rather the big yard.
Perfect. The follow-up question is, are you maintaining your own yard or are you having a landscape company? Or have you not even thought things yet?
Well, no. So if I had enough money, I'd have a landscaping company. I wouldn't lift a finger. But, you know, there is something soothing about cutting the grass, I think. That like you just throw on a podcast, you throw on music, and you just an hour, 45 minutes, whatever it's going to take. But I mean, if I had enough money, I'm choosing a landscaping company. I'm not doing anything.
Okay. Perfect.
Carl, where are you at on the yard thing? I mean, you got some space there at the new house, right?
I mean, a little bit, not a ton. I'm going to see if I can turn you guys around here so you can see my grass is coming in nice and green.
That's nice.
I'm pretty proud of. I got a big shipment of playground sand coming on Monday. It's spring break for the kids, so they're going to help me. But you use playground sand to kind of level out your grass, right? Your yard, so it's not so bumpy. Because when they throw down the turf here, they're throwing it down for speed, not a whole lot of love all the time. So we're going to be spreading that throughout the whole front and backyard. And I think we've got like 3 tons of sand coming, so quite a bit. And then we're going to try and flatten it out. I want to turn it into a bit of a fairway look if possible. Yep. Nice reel mower and get that going. So yeah, that's a good answer because I love the yard. I love doing my own landscaping, cutting the grass, you know, making sure the edges look good and get it all tight. So the problem is, Wino, as you know, with dogs, the inevitable, you know, burn spots from their pee. So I got a bunch of those in the back that just piss me off every morning. So, you know, I try and just deal with it. But anyways, yard is big for me. Okay, question 5 is, who's your celebrity crush?
Oh, man. So now or for, like, ever?
Who would you marry?
I remember I think it was Megan Fox. She was in, was it Transformers?
Transformers.
And, like, I remember, like, I was, like, I saw that and I was just like, oh, like, that's it. But I think... it would be, no, you know what? Actually, I'm going to scratch Megan Fox. I'm going to say Mila Kunis. Mila Kunis. I actually just watched the other day Forgetting Sarah Marshall. So maybe it's just because it's fresh in my mind, but I think it's Mila Kunis.
Lovely answer. I want to ask yours so bad, but I'm saving it for when I do the mega question with you. So
yeah, when we do these questions and then we do the bottle kill episode, we're going to get to the bottom of a lot of things.
The bottle kill.
Yeah, because Wino's just been biting his tongue on so many of these answers. You know, he wants to really let loose here. So
I'm probably going to finish dead last. I'm probably after hearing all these questions and knowing what you like, I'll probably still finish dead last.
We've never had anyone have minus points before. Yes. Okay, last question here. This will determine a lot. Okay. What's your favorite board game?
Favorite board game. Wow. That's a tough one. That is a very tough one. I gotta say Risk. I think I really, really like Risk. I used to play that all the time when I was growing up. It was like one of those games where, like, you know, when you're growing up as a kid and, you know, your friends would be like, oh, you know, let's go do this. Let's go. Like, who wants to play board games? But like Risk was like the one where you were like, all right, this is different. So I think Risk is my answer there.
Good choice. We used to play on the plane. There's a few of us, but me and Jay Beagle, Aaron Volpatti, sometimes we would we'd get on the plane, kind of get settled, and then you'd hear Beagles just like pop up and just be like, we risking it? And then sure, pop out their phone or their iPad or whatever. We had this massive game of Risk going. So I'm a big Risk fan as well. So,
well, and the other thing with that too is that like these games can last hours. Like yeah. you can go like, it's not like a game, you know, you play Monopoly, somebody can screw you over in, you know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, and it's over. Everybody's fun is done. And like the more you get invested into it, the better it is. So I think that kind of played a part into it too.
Yeah. You want to see people that are committed to the long game.
Right. Exactly.
5 minute fun game. You want 2 hours.
Right.
Yeah, Monopoly is banned in my family's house. We had too many fights. We got too competitive. Monopoly got banned.
No, Risk?
Monopoly's banned. Risk, we played it. It was too long as kids. We play Clue every holiday.
Oh, nice.
That's our family tradition for board games.
We played Monopoly, I can't remember, half a year ago. And Mandy, she doesn't play, never played a ton of Monopoly, not her favorite. And I kept asking her to make a trade. And she finally was like, fine, like if you think this is a fair trade, I'm like, it's 100% a fair trade. Ended up working out so good for me, just randomly. And and safe to say, we have never played since. She thinks that I'm a cheater. And Monopoly is now technically banned in our house too. So I'm with you. We have to add these up. This is gonna be tough. Okay, Hawaii was amazing. Sight unseen answer was great. Cheez-Its, I can dig it. Parsnip, love that too. Creative, you had an answer for it. The yard, great job. Wish you'd do the landscaping yourself. Mila Kunis, solid back in the day, that 70s show. And Risk, holy, that is just punch that in here. That's a 201 point score right there.
Where does that leave me?
Second place, Carl?
That puts you in second place by 12 points. Holy shit. That's a hell of a score.
Wow, dude. I'll take that. I came in, I was just like shooting for respectable, so I'll take second place for sure.
Absolutely. It's tough to get second. It's tough to get big points on this show right now. There's a lot of bunch up right now. I got to do like a full top 10 and figure out who's where, because we've had a lot of 100 to 115 point scores, but very few that get into the upper hundreds and let alone 200. So well played.
Love it.
Yeah, and next time we get together, Carl, I'm going to kind of take those lists down and we'll post this somewhere so people can see what our leaderboard looks like. Now that Andrew Gillis is a silver medal on the podium with this. Andrew, thanks for doing Carl's stupid questions so well, and thanks for joining us on AusCaps.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you.
Everybody else, thanks for listening. We'll talk next week.